City and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're going to start the hour, as we do every hour, with some headlines that you need to know. Start with some sad news in the NBA world. Hall of Famer and former Washington Bullets star Wes Unseld dies at the age of 74. The family said in a statement that Unseld had had lengthy health issues, most recently with pneumonia. His quote, "He was the rock of our family, an extremely devoted patriarch who reveled in being with his wife, children, friends, and teammates. He was our hero and loved playing basketball and working around the game of basketball for the cities of Baltimore, Washington, D.C., cities he proudly wore on his chest for so many years. Our condolences go out to the Unseld family." Next up on the headlines you need to know, a judge has weighed in on the case against Zion Williamson. Remember that there's questions on whether he was eligible to play as a result of benefits he received to go to Duke in 2018-19. Well, a Florida state court judge on Tuesday denied the Pelicans' rookie request to stay discovery into whether he was eligible under NCAA rules when he played that season. So they ruled he will be required to answer questions and requests for admissions from attorneys representing Gina and Ford and Prime Sports Marketing, who are suing Williamson for $100 million for breaching their marketing agreement. They're expected to file an appeal, so we'll see what that means moving forward. And lastly, in the headlines, a little bit of encouraging news in the coronavirus world. It looks like Major League Soccer and the MLS Players Association appear to be heading towards an agreement on economic concessions for 2020, as well as revised collective bargaining agreement terms. That's according to our very own Taylor Twellman. If the agreement is completed and ratified, it will see the two sides avoid a lockout that had been threatened by the league since last Sunday. So that will help MLS gain some economic relief from the damage suffered during the pandemic, which prompted the league to shut down on March 12th. Those are your headlines. It's First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear with us on the Shell Penzoil Performance Line. I'm Jason Fitz. You know the phone number. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You can call in. You can also tweet me, as many of you are doing today. If you've listened to me at all, I've been with ESPN on radio or in some capacity since late in 2016. If you've listened to me throughout the course of my career at ESPN, you know that I've often been the person that says, hey, we're going to escape here. We're going to get away from everything. We're going to find some reason to talk about other things so that you can get your mind off of the world. That's what I've largely used this microphone to do, and it's something that I've considered a real responsibility, whether in entertainment or sports, is to sort of divert everybody and give everybody a few hours where they don't have to think about anything else. What's going on in the world today, though, is too important. It means too much. If you listened yesterday, Stephen A. did a great job during this time slot of speaking to America and speaking from the heart in a way that really he was able to get things out that meant so much to him. I wanted to do the same today, but I wanted to do so in my own way. And the best way that I thought I could do it was by getting people together that I love and respect, that I have real relationships with, that I know that I can have open, honest conversations. And I want to have transparent conversations that maybe the rest of the world isn't comfortable with, maybe the rest of the world is afraid to. I'm the first to admit I'm a 43-year-old white guy. So talking about these issues in so many ways for many years has felt to me like it was useless, like my voice didn't have a place. And I can't decide now if that was because I was afraid to talk about those issues or because I just wanted to avoid them altogether. But what I want to do now instead is have real conversations in ways where my voice and this microphone, at least for a day, can offer some sort of thought to people, because I think it's more important than ever that we have serious conversations. So we're going to get to Straight Talk. Straight Talk doesn't play games. Get the unlimited plan with 25 gigs of high-speed data, then 2G for just $45 a month. Saves you up to 50% against the big carriers. No contracts, no compromise. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com. One of the most amazing, I'd say, lights at ESPN, people that just brighten up the room when they walk in it, is ESPN NBA analyst and Sparks forward Chinne Ogumike, someone that I consider not only a friend, but someone that I just respect the hell out of in every possible way, not just as an athlete, but also as an analyst, and also for the work ethic, and also for everything that she is to the world. So Chinne graciously agreed to join me today. Thanks for the time. I really appreciate you hanging out. And I know these conversations are awkward, so I just want to have them. Like, I'm trying to figure out, Chinne, when you see somebody like me, I'm 43, I'm white. Like, what can I be doing? What should I be doing? How can I be a better voice to help some level of change?
Hey, first of all, thank you so much for the kind words, Jason. You know, I think I first want to say, regardless of issues, you are just an awkward person in general. So
that is fair.
Acknowledge that. You know what I mean? This is our day-to-day life existence, and that's why I love you so much, okay?
That is fair.
I think right now, you know, I am a Nigerian American female athlete that was born and raised in Houston, Texas. And so, and I was born and raised with three other sisters. If you know anything about African culture, it's a predominantly patriarchal society, right? So even though I was born in Houston, Texas, Cypress, Texas, my family raised us to try to not let anything be a barrier to anything that we wanted to do. And I think every family has that goal and aspiration. I think the goalposts are different based on what we're seeing in society, you know, our standards for each other. And I think I would just like to start this conversation by saying everyone has a unique point of view, but I do think everyone's entitled to be heard as well. And I think for so long, we've been in our comfort zones, rightfully so, because that's how we operate. You go to work, you're so busy, you have all these things you have to do. It's easy to exempt yourself from things that are uncomfortable. It's easy to just sort of stay in your own lane. But now, in times of global pandemic, where we are forced to slow down, we are also forced to not ignore. We cannot be willfully ignorant to what's going on. If you are, you're doing it intentionally. And I think we're in the process of awakening as a society where when things have been going at 100 miles per hour, we could choose to sort of ignore some things that matter. Now we cannot. And I think that's why you see a heightened sense of urgency. So for people that may not look like me, may not have that experience, just understand our ultimate goal is to have a shared experience because we are in a shared place and we want that place to be better. So if at least you start there, that is progress. A lot of people are like, what can I do? What do I say? There's no real answer to that. But one thing I've realized, everyone can evaluate themselves. And I think that's the number one goal. So I guess starting there, that's something we can all choose to do. Now, moving forward from that, like I said, I'm from Houston, Texas, Cypress, Texas, the northwest part of Cypress, Houston. And so this is something that has really touched very close to home, considering George Floyd is from originally Houston, considering one of my closest people that I've gotten to know as I've worked at ESPN is Steven Jackson. And considering that I am a woman of color, right? So like, this has been so hard to process. And I guess the way I'd wrap up my initial thoughts before we get to things specifically is it is okay if you are struggling processing what's going on. It's okay if you don't know what to do. I'm confused. We're all confused because I think essentially as human beings, what we're experiencing right now does not make sense. You know, if you have a heartbeat and you really adhere to that heartbeat, whether it's global pandemic or the continual persecution of people of color here in the United States, those things do not make sense. Those things are hard to unpack. Those things are uncomfortable to discuss. But I think the reason why we're discussing it in sport, what people forget, and I'm hoping everyone has an open, open mind, at least open ears over the radio waves, is that by nature of loving sports, you are loving something that is ultimately striving for winning, greatness. Like these are all ideals that we cherish. We're a part of the sports community where you want to see a team succeed. You want to see the struggle and know that it was worth something. That's why we're talking about in sports. There are universal principles that apply in sports that apply in all aspects of life. Playing basketball, it would be great. Like the hardware is nice to take a picture with, right? But what do we cherish? We cherish the memories. We cherish literally that guy that you probably can't stand on your team, but hey, he hit the shot and he worked in the gym. Like we just literally watched The Last Dance where there were dysfunctional aspects of a team, but what united them? They wanted to succeed. In society, we are all different. We all come from different backgrounds. What unites us? We should all want the same success, collective success that we're moving forward, not dividing, because dividing is losing. So I guess that's how I'd start the conversation. When it comes to sports, if you love sports, if you say this is not relevant to sports, please, please check yourself, because the essence of what you love is the essence of what makes good societies.
That's really well said. We're talking to ESPN NBA analyst and Sparks forward, Chinay Ogumike. And, you know, Chinay, you mentioned earlier it's taken you a little time to figure out how to process all of this. So as a woman of color that is a WNBA player, when you see something like what we saw with the Knicks, where the Knicks are essentially not saying anything, like what's that moment feel like for you, given what you're dealing with right now?
It's frustration, I think, just because I understand. Look, I'm a WNBA player that just we accomplished a new collective bargaining agreement with the league. Meaning, the only reason I bring that up specific to the Knicks is that when you're in a workplace, everyone's job is valuable and everyone has a unique experience. And so to consciously disregard the value of one person does not contribute to the ultimate better business. Like, you can't avoid something. So I guess the way I'd put it in TV terms, and this is one thing I learned, when you go into studio and you're on air, you're at the mercy of the viewer, meaning millions of people are seeing you and reacting to how you are, right? You're saying your take or whatever the case may be, or even you're on the radio, right? When something happens that is not according to plan, which is that's life. Life is full of imperfections. Who's going to help you through those moments? I go on air, I sit at the table. Oh my gosh, I forgot. Or like, maybe I didn't notice my makeup is falling off or whatever. It looks crazy or something like that. If I didn't build a relationship with my colleagues at the table, if I didn't build a relationship with the cameraman, if I didn't build a relationship with the security man, like everyone that has contributed to this ultimate product that you care about, getting sports news, when I am struggling, someone else won't have that back to help, have your back to help that struggle. Like, for instance, cameraman, Chinay, hey, you have that built relationship. Chinay, look, can you fix this? Let me bring in the makeup. We're all one team. I think there are so many instances in business that are very similar. Just because there's a group of people that might be experiencing something, ignoring them is not the answer. Acknowledging them is the answer, because ultimately they're contributing to your better business. I don't know if that makes sense, but like that's the way I see it on TV. You have to respect everyone that you work with, and you have to understand what their struggles are, because if you isolate those struggles, they will not work in a beneficial way for your business overall. And it's just unfortunate that it continues to be the Knicks that make these type of headlines when things like this happen.
Well, and what you're saying sort of, it resonates with me, Chinay, because, you know, one thing that I think has always made it difficult for me, I didn't grow up with race issues. Like, I grew up in the entertainment business, right? And whether it's entertainment or sports, you know, Junior, Golic Jr. always uses the phrase meritocracy, right? You get what you earn, yes. You know? So I grew up in this world of, like, you know, in the classical music industry, you audition behind a curtain. Nobody knows who you are, what your gender is, how old you are, what you look like. They don't care. And then when you get into the higher levels of touring music, like if you can play, you're going to get a job, right? Like, these are the things that I'm used to. So sometimes it's so foreign to me to wrap my head around how there can be such large sections of the world that we root for as fans, whether it's entertainment or music, that have figured out some level of diversity and figured out how to love one each other and respect one another. And it just doesn't translate past that. I can't figure out why it stops at some level. And all of a sudden it just becomes about us versus them or you versus me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I absolutely agree. You know, I think that's the major issue. There's a disconnect to understanding why, I guess, you are using your platform today to talk the great conversations that are necessary right now, but uncomfortable for many people. I think there needs to be a wholesale recognition that in sports, the people that you're rooting for are typically the majority of the minority. Meaning, we are minorities, but we make up the majority in the business in which we're operating, meaning the NBA or possibly the NFL, not all sports. I'm assuming hockey is not as such, right? But but typically we are the majority of the minority. So that's why when people say stick to sports, the athletes that you're telling those people to stick to sports or to not have an issue or to shut up and dribble, whatever the case may be, the people that they grew up around for the existence of their life have a completely different struggle than what you're trying to say, and you're not even understanding the struggle. And you're absolutely correct. Like, this is the point that I was trying to make yesterday when I went on Get Up. a lot of people, you know, when they're trying to exempt themselves from this conversation, they might say, well, I can't relate, or I don't understand race. Like, try to educate yourself. And also, most importantly, understand that this is a human issue as well. It's about how we view and treat one another, and how something so small and out of our own control, I said it as pigmentation, can change and alter perception. Something out of control. When you're born, you can't control what you look like. You know what I mean? But that pigmentation alters perception, and it has the utmost of consequences. I always tell people, and this is another thing I was saying, no matter how much success, I am a, I have two jobs in the WNBA and also on ESPN. I graduated from Stanford University. I came from a well-to-do background. With my parents, I had know my heritage back home in Nigeria. Like, I'm good, right? I'm very fortunate. But no amount of success that I can make can save me from a society that can change their view of me based on how I look. Meaning, people don't see my background. People don't see my achievements when I'm walking down the street. We have a society that can turn on you based on how you look. So that doesn't, like, that no NBA player is immune, NFL player immune, that has the same struggle, right? So I think you see a lot of the success on social media. We see all the glory in sports. You see the studio on air. You see the court. You see the field. You don't see those everyday realities, which is why athletes care so much right now. I get worried when my dad walks in the morning by himself. Like, this is something I wake up, I say my prayers, and I always call my dad. I stayed on the phone with my mom anytime. You know, I used to play for the Connecticut Sun. I used to live, where are my spots? I used to live in Groton. I used to live in East Lyme. And then I used to live, Taftville. And so the drive to ESPN would be about an hour 15 for me. I do that drive to be ready for sports turn at 7. I do that drive at like 4 a.m. But like 3 a.m. if I was doing first and last with Gola Jr., right? I do that drive. I'd be on the phone with my mom for a majority of that drive. And then I do radio at night. And I'd be getting home probably at 2 a.m. I'd be on the phone. My mom would be up the majority of the night, just because if anything were to happen, I'm the only person on the road. We all know Connecticut cops, you know, like they are very on point when it comes to making sure you're not speeding, right? So like, but I'd be on my phone intentionally just because I had to. I didn't want anything crazy to happen. Now, I'm not like judging. These are just things I have to do, how I have to move. I have to check on my dad when he walks by himself in the morning, that type of stuff. Like, these are our everyday realities. Even though I'm a WNBA player, a degree from Stanford, a two-time All-Star, I'm good. I'm very fortunate. I'm very privileged. I still have to think like that. And I think that's what we're trying to bring awareness to. And when you say meritocracy, it's so, so, so true, because I always explain to people, athletes, the reason why we tend to speak up is because we have experienced something so pure in our society, meaning you are achieving based on your performance, not based on what you look like. When I go and hoop, look, the numbers don't lie, the stats don't lie. You can control everything on the most fair and level playing field. But when we leave the arena, when we leave the court, when we leave the field, that's not the same at all times. Like, yes, we can, you know, step into some more money, and yes, we can have gates and stuff, but like that, we're still going to be walking around and existing in the world. And the people we love and the people that look like us are still going to be walking around and existing in the world. That's the privilege that we acknowledge, knowing that the people that we have, that have built us to be these people on platforms and pedestals, even though we're seeing in society now that we're not the heroes, it's the essential workers and stuff like that, right? But also the people that are championing change. You know, those are the people that we have experienced, and we're trying to let people know that, hey, we are the lucky ones. And we have also achieved and competed on the highest level where there's been no barrier besides your performance, not pigmentation, you know? So that's the energy that we come from. And, you know, like, if you know me, I know I'm going on a riff, but I know it's probably not nearly as long as Dominique's riff. If you know me, you know that I love everybody. I'm here to hear you. Like, if you have a point of view, like, I grew up in Texas, conservative Texas. I was the only, I'm pretty sure I was the only black girl in my private school. I went to St. Edward's Private School in my grade, all the way until second grade. There were two other black kids there. And then I get to high school, and it's more diverse. I'm in Cyprus now. And then I get to college, and it's definitely super diverse because it's at Stanford. But, like, I grew up where I was constantly in a state of where I could choose to be uncomfortable. And I didn't want to let that steal my joy. So instead, I learned to listen, and I learned to say, hey, yo, I hear you, but this is my point of view. And I think that everyone can do that. Like, being the awkward, gangly girl with an African family that, like, you know, I'm just, like, speaking to my point of view. Like, you know, as a kid, you want to have, like, you're in school, you have crushes and all that type of stuff. Like, the energy I received was different. I was different. I didn't, you know, like, I didn't get that type of energy as a kid, right? So, like, you have these desires to want to be accepted, but I think it's a two-way street. And I learned then that we are capable. Like, I've met so many great people that started one way and then shifted because we came at it at the same energy, knowing that ultimately we want to relate better because that's just better for the both of us. Harboring anger, harboring ignorance, that takes energy. Moving past it, you're conserving that energy and you're channeling into something much better. And I think as an athlete, now we have this vehicle where, like, yo, this is achievable through sport. And it's also something that my family, my friends are struggling with. How can we spread that energy to more people? And I'm hoping people can sort of hear this message, knowing it is possible. And I know it's hard, but it takes, the littlest you can do, the least you can do, is self-introspection and also try to understand the point of view instead of condemning it before you know it. That's where I'm at, Fitz.
She's Chinee Ogumike, and I'll say this quickly before we let you go. You know, as I said earlier, my brother was in prison for a long time, and he's turned out to be fairly successful in his life, or very successful in his life. And he laughs about the fact that he's still at some level profiled. But understand that my brother, as a white guy in prison, he's covered in tattoos with the look, and he's got that. There's certain things about him that he chose to do in his life that make him more likely to be profiled. One of the alarming things is we've now talked to a couple of different people on this show that have been tremendously successful and through no fault of their own have to go through so many of these things just because of the color of their skin. That in and of itself speaks to the privilege that I don't always feel like in my life I've necessarily had privilege, in the sense that so many people understand privilege, but I've had privilege in every way that I possibly could as somebody that's white. Chinee, I really appreciate you coming on. I appreciate your insight. You are amazing. Thank you so much for hanging out with us.
Thank you for having me. And to all of those that are listening right now, I know it could be uncomfortable, but I want to say thank you. Even if you're not happy with what I'm saying, I want to say thank you for even listening, because hopefully eventually you'll understand a little bit better. So thank you. I appreciate it. I love everybody. And Fitz, what you're doing is really special, and that's why we're friends, even though you are 24/7 awkward. So it's okay.
Well, that's part of my charm, Chinee. You're the best. Thank you so much.
It is.
ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. Insurance for motorcycles, boats, RVs, for protection on the road and the water. See how much you can save in as little as 3 minutes at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. We're going to keep the conversation going with somebody. It's been three or four people in the last week that have truly changed my life. We're going to talk to one of them next. With an important message I think you need to hear. We're going to do that, but first, we're going to tell you about Straight Talk. It's time for Straight Talk. Even though most live sports are on hold right now, big wireless companies haven't stopped playing games. They're always trying to lock you into overpriced contracts. With Straight Talk Wireless, there are no contracts. Runs on America's best network. Same as big carriers, but you save up to 50%. $45 a month gets you the unlimited plan with 25 gigs of high-speed data, then 2G. You might miss sports, but don't play games you'll lose. Straight Talk Wireless, no contracts, no compromise. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at StraightTalk.com. That's all we're doing today is Straight Talk, and you'll hear more of it next. First, take your take. ESPN Radio, ESPN News. First, take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. I'm Jason Fitz. All of our guests join us on the show, Benzo Performance Line. And if you're just tuning in, you know that usually I use this time to give everybody a reason to escape, to not think about what's going on in the world, and to talk about sports. Well, I'm not doing that today. And, you know, it's important to me. Stephen A. had the opportunity yesterday to talk to everybody from 1 to 3 Eastern in this time slot, which I think was incredible for Stephen A. and incredible for so many people to get to hear what he had to say. That being said, I have a lot to say on what's going on in the world today. There are a few conversations I don't think I'll ever forget in my life. One, last week, was with Emmanuel Acho, who started sort of a movement of asking people to come out and speak out and help. And I remember that moment and the conversation that came afterwards because it really challenged me. The next one that I think about often is conversations with a close friend of mine that joins us now. We're going to get some Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. SportsCenter host Elle Duncan joins us. And SportsCenter host Elle Duncan is not just defined by what she does, but she's defined by partially who she is, an incredible person and a close friend. And my objective in having these conversations over the last couple of hours was to have real conversations with friends, because I think we can be more raw, more real, and I can be more vulnerable than a lot of you are comfortable being in these conversations. I think there are a lot of questions that, frankly, people that are 42, almost 43 like me, that are white, have been almost afraid to have. And I'm willing to have those on air because I think it's important for everybody to hear them. So, Elle, thank you, first and foremost, for everything that you've been doing, everything you continue to do in my life, and for helping push me. I'm going to ask you a really direct question here, because mm-hmm. I felt like a week ago, if you'd have asked me, I'd have told you that the black community did not want at any point to have a sports talk host that's 43 and white speaking for them, because what the hell can I know about your plight? I felt like a week ago my voice was useless and not needed by that community. Where did I miss so much?
Well, you missed because what you did was you were not recognizing the privilege of being able to disassociate yourself from other people's issues, right? So I always say this to people when they're like, well, I feel some type of way because, to your point, I'm not a black person, and what do I know? And well, you know what, Fitz? I love you, and I think you're a fantastic sports talk radio host and television host and all those things, and you haven't played a day of professional football or baseball or basketball or hockey in your life. So if you are qualified to talk about things like sports, then how are you not qualified to talk about things like human rights? And the point is that everyone always goes into conversations expecting to win some type of debate, but this isn't a debate. We're simply asking for our white allies like you to listen, to receive it, and to then do your research and figure out how you can effectively help make change. That's all we're asking for you to do. No one is asking for anything more than your empathy. Not apathy, empathy, because it is apathetic to simply stand by and say, I hate this for you, but I wasn't raised that way, and I promise to just treat you with respect. That's not enough.
Well, and I love everything you just said, because you're right. I mean, at some level for me, I can't decide whether it was just easier not to talk about it or more comfortable not to talk about it, because you have this awkward sense behind you when you're looking at it. And you're absolutely right when it comes to the privilege of being able to escape whatever situation's going on in the world, because I can do that. I don't have to worry, you know, when I'm in a situation where I get pulled over, and this is actually a true story. I got pulled over in a terrible area a decade ago in Nashville. I got pulled over in a terrible part of town. I'd probably had a few drinks, and realistically at that stage of my life, I got pulled over. And when the cop came up to the car, he asked me what I was doing in that neighborhood, because I'd bought a house in a, let's say, up and coming part of town mm-hmm. that wasn't all that good. So he was questioning what I was doing in the neighborhood because I didn't look like I belonged because I wasn't black. And there's this moment where I had been speeding and I had a headlight out, and he let me go. Like there was no issue.
Right. Cause he was looking out for you.
Right. I mean, so there's this moment where I don't think I've ever thought, until you and I started having these conversations, about the fact that when I get pulled over, 9 times out of 10, I don't have to worry about things. I don't have to think about, okay, if I get a speeding ticket, fine, what's it do to my insurance? Like, that is such a first world problem compared to what anybody that doesn't look like me may have in these situations. And that's a real feeling.
Absolutely. I always joke with my friends. I'm like, if your biggest concern when you see the blue lights behind you is, oh crap, am I going to be able to find my registration? then you're certainly in a good spot, because you're right. I mean, we are taught, and we have to teach our sons specifically, but I mean our black daughters as well, because simply being a black man doesn't mean that you're or being a black woman rather doesn't mean that you're immune from prejudices and from bigotry and from the systemic racism that you'll face. But having to look your child in the eye and talk about at what point they go from being adorable and cute to a threat, how they have to disarm themselves, you know, when you go into a store, you know, keep your hands visible so that they don't think that you're stealing, you know, when you get pulled over in the middle of the day for whatever reason, speeding, running a stop sign. I mean, we just saw a video of a black man, I believe in Texas, that ran a stop sign and like 7 cop cars showed up and pulled guns on him in front of his grandma's house. Like, it's, you're always being taught how to, at a disproportionate level, protect yourself so that you can survive a traffic stop. And that is this, it's a result, A, of generational trauma, okay? Because, I mean, I come from a black mother and a black father who protested and lived through the civil rights movement and, you know, had water hose turned on them and still, yet and still can show grace and can still, you know, have friends that don't look like them and can take the high road and recognize that not everybody is that way. But this sort of distrust and mistrust has been passed down from generation to generation. When you have dogs, you know, turned on you for peacefully protesting, how do you ever get that out of your system and out of your mind and out of your heart and out of your spirit, frankly? And so it's something that's passed down to us. It's an unfortunate part of being Black, and that you always have to, for the most part, find yourselves in situations where you are the minority and you're tasked almost with making sure that you're doing enough so that you're comfortable in other people's space and that they're comfortable with you. You know, I told you this the other day, like, I grew up in mostly white neighborhoods. I played softball. I was almost always the only Black girl on my teams. I went to predominantly white schools. And part of the reason that I'm witty and that I like to tell jokes and that I'm funny is because for me, that was the great equalizer. And I thought, this is the way that I sort of make white people feel comfortable with me, is by being funny and, you know, appearing less of a threat because I'm so funny. And so that's kind of how we're always taught. I remember my grandmother always being like, when we go into this restaurant, you know, keep your voice down as much as possible. We don't want them to think like we're the loud Black family. And here, you know, so again, it's just like, it's just these constant little tiny cuts that eventually become gaping wounds. And that's why you're experiencing so much anger and frustration right now across the country.
Which I think is an important point because, frankly, I mean, there's a lot of conversation about the looting and the rioting that's going on right now. And what's lost in this is, to me, we've got to start looking at everything that's going down, like, whether it's from the side of anybody, and asking the questions, why? How did we get here? Why are people doing this? And frankly, why is there an entire community that feels like the only way they can be heard is to go out and riot and loot? I mean, there's got to be action that caused this, right?
Right. I think that, first of all, there is a distinction between protesters and looters and rioters. You know, there is. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of examples of people peacefully protesting. And then you have opportunistic looters and rioters who are taking advantage, and some people who are just feeling that kind of anger. And I'm not here to say, you know, that the method is a problem, because we need to get back to what precipitated all of this. And I have been using a lot of like metaphors and analogies, trying to speak with some of my white friends who I know are our allies in a way that they could understand. And I want you to imagine, Fitz, that your loved one, that Sonny, okay, or for the people that are listening right now, that a loved one of yours, your son or your father or your sister or your husband or your wife, was sick, and that their health and their life were on the line, and you couldn't get a doctor to listen to you. What would you do? Like, how much noise would you make? Maybe the first thing you would do is try to seek the opinion of another doctor. And if that didn't work, you might take a holistic approach and try vitamins, and you might pray. But if you had to watch the anguish and the fear and the pain on your loved one's face every single day, knowing that while you know what's wrong with them and that you can self-diagnose the problem, you do not wield the power to cure it. And that is exactly what is facing Black people when we talk about these things. It is life or death to us. It means that much to us. And you, Fitz, as a white man, and for the people that are listening that are white, you're the doctors. You're the ones that can cure it. We don't have the power of the prescription pad, because if we did, don't you think it would be done by now? So we're asking you to not only listen and receive us, but to help us. That's why a call to action. We need you. We need you.
Sports Center host L. Duncan joining us with the Straight Talk. Everything for less, only at Walmart. You just said something. You need help, and there's got to be a way to help. When we come back, I'm going to ask Elle some direct questions about what can be done, what should be done, and how we can get better. We're going to continue this conversation, First Take, Your Take. We're going to do all of that, obviously, coming up next as we get you through that. First, before we get to that, I want to tell you about Home Depot. This is a true story that happened over the course of the weekend. Toilet stopped working. I had no idea. I don't know anything about these things. I can't fix anything. And I saw a piece was leaking, and I don't know what it is. I don't know what it's called. I didn't have to. I took it off the toilet. I took it to the other room and I took a picture of it in the Home Depot app. This is all true. Took a picture of it in the Home Depot app. It told me that I could find said piece in aisle 7, told me where to go in the aisle, told me how many they had, told me how much it was. I was able to walk in and out of Home Depot in a matter of seconds, get it fixed, and then turn around and install it. That's the ease you can have with the app. You can go online to find essential products, information you need. You can order online. They can have it waiting for you at the store. They can even deliver over 1 million items free. And they have thousands of how-to videos for the projects and repairs you need to make if you're like me and don't know how to do any of that. Home Depot is here to help. The Home Depot, how doers get more done. I'm going to figure out how we can get some things done next with L. Duncan. First Take Your Take, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shell Penzel Performance Line, including my current guest, SportsCenter host L. Duncan. And we've been talking, if you're just tuning in, I would recommend go listen to the podcast because we've had some great guests today. Dominique Foxworth, Chinea Ogwumike, L. Duncan. And what we've been trying to do is have real, raw, honest conversations. I'm trying to have the conversations you might be uncomfortable with. So, L, before we went to break, you said we need help from change. And when you're talking about help, you're talking about specifically people that look like me. Mm-hmm. People need to be advocates. How can we help? What's the next step in actually helping this?
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, there's a lot of resources out there available right now to people who are particularly interested at this particular juncture and how they can help. There's a Google document that's sort of going around right now, or if you Google 75 things that white people can do to help racial injustice, there's an entire list of things that pop up that I've sort of been sending to people. But I would say a great start is, I've seen a lot of people say, well, I always teach my children to love everybody and to choose, you know, to love people for who they are and whatnot. And that's fine and that's good. But what we should also teach your children is to not only not be racist, but to be vocally anti-racist. So teach your children to call it out when they see it. You know, teach your children when they see people when they see disenfranchised people who are being treated unfairly, to call it out. When they're in circles where everyone looks like them and someone says something bigoted or problematic, to call it out, even if it makes it uncomfortable. I would say for those of you that are professionals, you know, go to your human resources department and ask if their external message of diversity and inclusion actually matches their internal representation. I would say, you know, you can call your local police department and find out if it is a requirement that all police officers wear body cams. You can, if you're a teacher, make sure that whether you've got all white kids in your class or not, that the books, that the toys, that the dolls in your classrooms are representative of all cultures. So there's a lot of different things that you can do, but honestly, it really starts in engaging. So if you have a black friend that's never talked to you about what it's like to be black in America, start there, because they probably haven't approached you about that conversation for a bevy of reasons, and in particular because they're waiting for you to ask.
It's such a great point from Elle, and something that, to be transparent, we've gone through as friends. We've known each other for a long time, and I don't know I've ever leaned on her on what I can do to be a better voice for the black community than I have in the last week. It's made me a better person, and I would challenge everybody listening to do the same. Ask the tough questions, be willing to feel stupid for a minute, and really listen mm-hmm. to the response. Don't debate, discuss. That's the biggest key to me in all of this. Will Cain's going to keep the conversation going on ESPN Radio. She's been L. Duncan. I'm Jason Fitz. Thank you so much for listening. Keep asking tough questions, and let's all be better.